I found this self-portrait recently in my parents' basement that I made in college, and it has my face in the lower right-hand corner and then a huge talk bubble. And in the middle of the talk bubble, which is totally empty except for in tiny letters, the words, "I have nothing to say."
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So, if I were to ask you your greatest fear in the world, statistics tell me that aside from death, most of you would likely answer public speaking. And while the connection between public speaking and health isn't necessarily in focus for all of us right away, what is true and what I hear behind the scenes in my office is I have powerful women on big missions to change the world, and then eventually they butt up against the need to do public speaking, to share what it is that they are doing in a really broad way. And it scares the heck out of them. It induces anxiety for them. It makes them avoid the next right step in their business or in their mission because they just don't want to feel the pain of that particular experience. And so it is my pleasure to welcome today's guest, Johanna Walker, no relation to me. She is a speaking coach. She is known as the fear-blasting storytelling maven for coaches, consultants, leaders, and change makers. She's the founder of Women Who Speak, a transformational speaker coaching program for female leaders. And she's the co-founder and co-host of Boulder, Colorado's popular bi-monthly Story Slam series, Truth Be Told. In addition to her work as a speaker and coach, Johanna has written and performed solo theater pieces, and she's toured throughout the U.S. and Canada. She holds an MEd from Kent State University, an MFA from Naropa University, and is a certified WholeSpeak public speaking coach. It is my pleasure to welcome Johanna to the podcast. Johanna Walker, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's great to be talking today.
Well, I'm really excited to jump into our conversation because I'm a clinician, and one of the privileges that I have is really being able to listen to people's stories. And one of my interests is really getting upstream and around the corner to understand what's behind people's emotions. And anxiety is something I hear about a lot in my practice. I work with entrepreneurs, and when we really delve into it, where people are stuck or where that anxiety is coming from, I'm amazed how often they tell me, you know what, my business is exploding. I'm finally at the stage where I have real momentum, but I need to be on stage or I need to be in front of people in a bigger way. And it is massively anxiety provoking. And so I was so excited when we intersected because I was like, this is a topic that is actually more relevant than I think people realize. So before we jump into all of that, can you just give us a bit of a background and your story? I know your expertise is in pulling out other people's stories, so I would really love to hear yours.
Well, my story, you know, first of all, there are many different, I have many different stories. I don't, you know, there's not just one story. There are many different stories and many different ways of telling the stories. But when I think about why I do what I do and how I got to this place, my story begins when I was a kid. When I was a young person, I was somebody who didn't speak. I was very, very quiet. I would go sometimes for days without speaking. My job was to figure out what the right answers were and deliver them, to figure out what other people wanted me to think and do and say and feel and deliver. And the best way I could figure out, you know, like I was too terrified of getting the wrong answer to take any risk. So mostly I stayed quiet. Mostly I didn't speak. And as I said, I would go days without speaking. And then I found this self-portrait recently in my parents' basement that I made in college. And it has my face in the lower right-hand corner and then a huge talk bubble. And in the middle of the talk bubble, which is totally empty except for in tiny letters, the words, "I have nothing to say."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this was my self-portrait in college. This was the story I told about myself in college. I really believed I had nothing to say, and I went through the world pretty quietly. But I was always a writer. I had stacks and stacks of journals, diaries. I wrote and wrote and wrote. And thankfully, this kept me connected to myself and kept me, you know, connected to my humanity. And I found myself, so I wrote journals, I wrote poetry. I was in the poetry community where I lived in Kent, Ohio. I went to poetry readings, though I never dared read a poem that I read or a poem that I had written. And then there was the Kent State shootings. It was the 20th anniversary of the Kent State shootings in Kent, Ohio. And they did a huge 48-hour poetry celebration. And poets came from all over the world. Poets who couldn't come sent their writing to be read by local poets. So I raised my hand to read somebody else's poem. I thought, okay, I can do that. So I got to the microphone. I got to the stage. It was about to be my turn. And I was like, you haven't given me my poem yet. What am I going to read? And they said, oh, we thought you were reading your own poem. And I totally panicked. I wanted nothing more than to run out of the room. I was like, no, you don't understand. I don't do that. My poems were deeply personal, but I did. I went through my folder and I pulled out a poem and I read my poem at a microphone in a room full of people. And at that point, a lot of my writing was about my story of silence. So I read this poem and the resonance was tremendous. Like hearing my voice in the microphone, hearing my voice fill the room, hearing my voice connect to the people in the audience was completely transformative. Like being able to feel that connection was palpable. And I felt like, oh, there's my voice. Oh, there I am. Oh, I do have something to say. I do have something to say. And so many women afterwards came up and said, thank you for telling your story. That's my story too, which was astonishing to me that I wasn't the only person who had that story. And I realized, I started to see like, oh, this is part of a bigger story of women and speaking and women and silence. And as I started to speak more, and at that point it was all in poetry and theater, telling my story was transformative for me and for the people I spoke to. It opened the door for someone else to tell her story. So that set me on a path of telling my story and of helping other people tell theirs. I started working with adolescent girls and women in jail, and then much later with business owners and corporate CEOs, over and over finding just the power of telling a story and how so many of us have put so much of our voices on the back burner and parts of our story on the back burner because they're not, you know, there wasn't a soft landing pad. There wasn't a place for it to be told.
And where do you think
that's a little bit of a story.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I don't mean to jump in there. And I'm just so fascinated by your acknowledgement that this is a shared experience by so many women. In your experience and expertise in this field, where do you think that's coming from? Is it that we generationally didn't have mothers who were used to standing up and using their voice? Was it a bad experience in school? Like, have you found a commonality to that, to the stories of the women who felt that they didn't have a place to share their voice?
Yeah, over and over, there are stories of just, I think as young people, we don't get the support. We don't get told we're geniuses. We don't get told that our stories matter, that our experience matters. You know, our job is to be good and to deliver and to be well behaved. You know, it lands differently on everybody for sure, but there's always some consistent story of just not the stories we get told about ourselves are not, you're a genius and you should be a leader and you need to get on stage and speak and tell your story. Our experiences aren't validated. You know, and then there's just the story we get told by marketing and capitalism that we're not enough over and over. We're not enough. We're not enough. So those stories run deep. Stories are powerful.
Stories are powerful. And so how, when you're working with women, and we'll talk about women in particular, because that's our audience. When you're working with women, and I know there's women out there who are like, I get it. I totally resonate with that. Now, what do I do? Where do you take them? What's the first step for them in terms of connecting to their story and having the confidence to share it?
It really depends. I work with people a couple of different ways, but it begins with being willing to walk towards the fear. Like people talk about, oh, I'm afraid of public speaking. The stories they tell themselves are these recorded stories that got recorded. I have nothing to say. My story isn't good enough. I'm not as good as she is. Somebody else has already said it. My story is too intense, or my story is not intense enough, or, you know, so it's being willing to rewrite those stories. So the first step is just being willing to walk towards it, being willing to walk towards it and change the old story that we've been told and consider the possibility that I have something to say that is of value to you. I have something to say that could actually change your life.
And then where do you go? Because I would imagine you have a process around tapping into one's story. Because I think we all have these experiences. And you said at the beginning, you're like, I have a lot of stories. And they're all relevant for different reasons. So how do we really start to pull out the highlights and put a lens on it that is, okay, this was my experience and this is how it can help other people? Because I think that's a unique ability. And for a lot of people, that's not intuitive to them in terms of how to do that.
Yeah, well, one of the things that is so important to me about speaking and telling our stories is being connected to the body, to our bodies, that we live in bodies and we go through the world in a body and that our experiences live in our bodies and our stories live in our bodies. So I work very physically, like getting on your feet and being playful with our bodies. So, you know, many people, when they think about speaking, when you think about your voice, it's like my head and my throat, my mouth, my voice is right here in my mouth and my throat. And that's where speaking happens. And I am all about dropping down into our bodies and speaking from and of and through our bodies. So sometimes it starts with playfulness and improv and getting physically connected, getting physically awake and physically present. And when your body's fully on board and your body's fully in the room and it's connected to your heart and your voice and your spirit and all of that is showing up, then different stories reveal themselves. So that's one way, is to get really present physically.
And when you say that, are you talking about getting in state, as some people would say?
Sure, getting in state. But I think it's also about cracking patterns. It's about cracking the rigidity of that we hold in our bodies and cracking patterns, just releasing tension. Like one thing I say is your voice is your expression of your human truth. And your voice is vibration. Mm. And tension is an enemy to vibration. And so any tension in your body, which includes the stories in your mind that you're telling, any tension limits the vibration, which limits the expression of your human truth. So part of the work we do is really about releasing tension so that your stories can reveal themselves. And then we do dig. We do a lot of digging and poking and throwing things against the wall and trying stuff and letting ourselves be surprised. So some people come in thinking, here's my story. I have one story. This is the story I want to tell. And that's great. But often once we start kind of shaking that loose a little bit, there's another story that's beneath that and another one beneath that isn't the first one to rise to the surface. It might be the one we've been hiding. It might be the one that feels a little bit, you know, embarrassing to tell, or like, oh, I could never tell that story. That's too personal. Oh, I could never tell that story. People would judge me. And when we kind of start peeling the layers away, the really juicy stories start to reveal themselves. And those are the stories that open doors to new places in yourself, new places in your relationships, new places in how you talk about who you are.
Okay, so I want to get into two of those pieces. I want to get into judgment, and I want to get into juicy. And I think before we go to juicy, we've got to talk about judgment, because it'll loosen us up to this notion of delving into juicy and taking the risk to delve into juicy. But, you know, one of the things that I hear, and I know you've written a lot about this, is that people are scared to step on stage because ultimately, when we break it down, they're scared of being judged. And you would say, yeah, you are being judged. So, like, take us through that a little bit and break that down for us so that we can just confront that fear head on.
Yeah, I think it's true. We're being judged. And that shows up a couple of ways, because when you're in the audience and you're listening to a speaker, you're judging. We're always making judgments in relationships. Should I trust this person? Is this somebody I want to listen to? Is this somebody whose authority I respect? Is this somebody who is going to offer me something that I don't have yet? And so we're making those judgments all the time. So am I willing to put my phone down so that I can hear what this person is saying? So on that level, we're making just human judgments of, you know, they're kind of quick, unconscious judgments of the person that we're about to listen to. So those judgments are happening. And then the other thing is, people judge each other, and it's not always nice, you know, it's not always, and people's unprocessed disappointment gets pinned on you as the speaker. You're the one being willing to put yourself out and take a risk and stand on stage and say, I have something to say that I want you to hear. That is a bold move. And when you're willing to do that, the person in the audience who is still afraid to do that is going to pin their disappointment, their judgment, their fear on you. And so there are so many different ways that as a speaker, when you stand up and claim the authority and claim that space in front of the room, you're opening yourself for all that judgment. But you're also opening yourself to incredible connections and the possibility that you are going to change somebody's life. And that something you say is going to touch somebody and completely transform them. So it's when you can stand really strongly in your message and your presence and the clarity of who you are and what you believe and confident that what you have to say could make a difference in somebody's life, then the judgment can just roll off, bounce away, and you invite people into real connection.
Yeah, I find women in particular, when we connect to something that's bigger than ourselves or perceived as being bigger than ourselves, we can step into a confidence that we didn't know we had. Men, I feel like they have a lower barrier to entry to confidence. But when I'm working with women, I was like, let's connect your experience to something bigger than you. And they're willing to go there. But I'm curious about your experience, because you were like, you know, you stood on stage and you finally heard your voice and people shared with you that it was impactful for them. But did that turn confidence on for you? Or was that the first step in a path towards confidence? And then, like, where did you really connect to it?
Yeah, well, that's definitely the one step in a, you know, grow, connecting to my voice, reclaiming my voice, connecting to my confidence is a lifetime journey. It's not one and done.
There's no pill.
And that was there's no pill.
Right.
There's no pill. And there's continuing, you know, there are continual opportunities to meet my fear and walk towards it and reveal new layers of confidence. Like I'm actually giving a TEDx talk this fall, and it's shaking my bones. You know, it's like, oh my God, once you give a TEDx talk, you got to actually have something to say. And then I slam right back to, wait a minute, I have nothing to say, that old story. And so those old stories, and that's good news. If that old story is coming up again, it means I'm growing.
Yeah.
So, but
No, I was just going to say, I love that. Like, I was just going to applaud that for you because it's almost like we're scared of discomfort, and discomfort is where growth happens. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, you keep going, but I was really proud of you there for a second.
Thanks. Well, I was appreciating what you were saying about it's bigger than something bigger than you. And I think that has been a key learning for me. That is what I heard over and over again. It's not about you as a speaker. It's not about you. It's about the connection. It's about the person in the audience that is hearing you and that is opening their heart to you. And I had this was about 4 years ago now. I gave a talk that was a big leap for me. I was invited to speak about how I walk the edge. And I immediately knew I needed to speak about my journey around not having children. This book conference was called Spiritual Women Leaders. And so it was how I walked the edge. And that journey about me and not having children had been a very deeply spiritual and very profoundly personal journey. But I knew I had to tell that story. When it came time to give the talk, I was petrified. I was terrified. I was in bed that morning under the covers, literally trying to figure out how I could get out of the talk, coming up with excuses that I was sick, that my car had broken down. I was like, Johanna, you don't have to do this. Why do you continually do this? Why do you have to put yourself out there like this? You don't have to do this. And I did it. I went to the event and I, you know, even when I'm standing backstage, I'm preparing to go on stage, I'm still trying to figure out how to get out of it. But the thing that turned around for me was reminding myself that there was somebody in the audience who needed to hear my talk today. That I had heard somebody's talk that had inspired me to speak about this experience. And I knew that there would be, and I said, if there was one person in the audience who would be touched by this talk, that was worth my walking out on stage. And I did. I walked out on stage for her, this unknown person. I didn't know who she was, but I knew there was going to be one person to whom my talk would make a difference. And she's the reason I walked on stage. In that moment, I got in my bones that it's not about me. You know, it's about that connection, that gift. And there was one woman, and there were many more than one woman. And, you know, my talk was online and many, many more people have heard it and it has touched many women deeply. And so that was a huge teaching for me. And I share that over and over with people because I think that helps get through the fear of judgment, that it's not about you. And it just slices right through that fear when you remember that you're giving a gift, you're actually changing somebody's life.
The upside is so much bigger than the downside.
Exactly. Exactly.
Have you had an experience where you've had judgmental feedback?
I have.
In any capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
But look, you're still here.
Yeah. And I think I think in this moment I'm not thinking of a specific incident, but I feel more and more I can actually meet it and receive it. Like, I feel like I know when to be like, that's not about me. You take your judgment and have it for lunch. And other times where it's like, oh, there's something valuable there that I can learn from. And I think my discernment is getting better about really knowing what I need to pay attention to.
Yeah. And I often say to my clients, and I have four girls, I was like, if you're not getting feedback, or I've got three girls, I don't have four. Oh gosh, I hope the universe is telling me something. If you're not getting feedback like that from the universe, you're probably not doing something big enough. And
right.
And again, I think it's just changing the story and the perception of the possibility and risk of feedback. And if you're so vulnerable that one piece of constructive feedback is going to completely destroy you, then you probably got some other work to do before you're going to step on stage.
Exactly.
But it's part of what comes with it. So you have to find a new way of looking at it. Take us through the ingredients of effective storytelling. So for those people who are like, okay, I got a story. I want to share it. I'm ready to go. Like, how do we structure the sharing of that? What do we need to be mindful of?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing is really knowing your context, knowing who you're speaking to, and knowing why you're telling the story. I host, for example, I host a story slam in Boulder. It's called Truth Be Told. There's a theme for the night. People from the audience put their names in the hat. They tell the story. They tell a story based on the theme, and then the audience votes on the best story. It has to be a true story. 5-minute time limit. That's one very particular kind of story. And then I host a coaching group for women speakers. It's called Women Who Speak, where women craft a talk. And I take them through the whole process of crafting a talk and then delivering a talk. And that's a different kind of story. So they're telling a story that is the center of their business, of their mission, and they're crafting that story into a talk that invites the audience into their own story and invites the audience into their journey and connects to the audience in a different way. So there's a very different intention behind telling that story. It sits in a different context. And so, you know, and then there's different telling a story at a dinner table, telling a story to children. They all have, so knowing your audience and knowing why you're telling the story is the first place to start. But then I think the thing that is universal through all of those stories is that there is a change. There's a transformation. It's not just a series of this happened and then this happened and then this happened and then this happened and then we all lived happily ever after. It's not just a series of events, but it's really understanding the transformation, understanding what is different at the end of the story than was true at the beginning of the story. How has the protagonist of the story changed? So there's a conflict and a resolution. And I think that's one of the central things that makes a good story is really understanding that transformation, understanding what's at stake. You know, when there are stakes and the person telling the story is either going to get the thing they want or they're not going to get the thing they want, that's what I want to care about. I want to lean in and really feel those stakes. I think the other thing is specificity. Stories happen in time and space. They're not big, general, vast ideas. They happen in time and space. And the more specific you can be about when and where, the moment your story happened, the moment that transformation happened, the moment that person scooped in and helps you take a different path, the more specific you can be, then that opens a door into the universal, into the place where I can actually connect to your story.
One question I have in terms of that connection, and one thing I feel like certainly I'm reading a lot about lately, and I don't know if other people have had this also, but it's just the power of including vulnerability in your story. And really, like, we could talk about time and place, but then we can talk about the feelings that we're having in that time and place, and we can start to share on that level. How do we do vulnerability in a way that it seems authentic, that it isn't a victimization of one's experience? Is there a vulnerability framework, which maybe is the antithesis of vulnerability, but are there things to keep in mind when we're sharing that? Because I think there's a beautiful balance between oversharing and effectively sharing so that it still has the intended outcome.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think there is, you know, I talk about strategic vulnerability, that you are in the kind of talks that we give for our businesses and for our missions and our projects, where we're really trying to move someone to action or want to inspire our audience into action, then the vulnerability is about, one, making a very human connection so that your audience can say, yeah, she gets it. She gets it. Oh, this is a real person. She gets it. And the other is being really clear about what's the transformation you're inviting your audience into. And how can you share your process through that transformation and through that journey? So there is some strategy around that vulnerability. But being able to tell the story with perspective. Like I always say, if you're in the middle of it and the vulnerability you sort of crumble underneath the vulnerability, you might not be ready to tell that story. And that's okay. Like, there's a lot of cleanup we have to do around our stories so that I can be the, you know, it's like I've returned from my hero's journey and I'm sharing the gifts of my journey. And I can be the sort of holder of the space, which invites the audience into their story. If I'm kind of still in the middle of the trauma and I'm, you know, it overcomes me, it overtakes me, and I'm not, then I'm asking the audience to be the holders of my space. They become the therapist, as it were, you know, and they're listening to me might go through my process. So telling your vulnerable story is not about you processing your traumatic history.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of being able to have perspective, have enough perspective and enough distance that you can tell it from a place of learning and wisdom and growth.
Yes. Not like you're on your therapist's couch.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're still too close to it then. How is it that we then take this, like we take the story and we find the confidence? How do we harness this and leverage this power of storytelling as entrepreneurs? What's the leap where we just take these from like the skills of storytelling and the ability to stand on stage and speak? And then how do we really effectively leverage that as an entrepreneur? Where's the potential?
Yeah, well, I think it's really being willing to be vulnerable, being willing to, like in my Women Who Speak mastermind, one of the things that we happened in one of my retreats last year was we're doing a process, and one of the participants said, "Oh fuck, I have to tell that story," and we got named a fuck nugget. And so it's like that moment where I was like, oh, that story, I have to tell that story. I don't want to tell that. You know, that's the story that's like a little bit on your edge of vulnerability. And of course, there's no story you have to tell. You don't have to tell any story. But that often is a sign, the story that's like, oh, that's a little bit edgy for me. Often that's the one that really takes you into your authenticity and your vulnerability. Because what happens is you have to dig a little bit deeper into yourself, into your confidence, to be able to really stand in that story, stand in the value of that story, and trust that that story is going to invite somebody else into their story and into a place they need to go. So one is being willing to go for that story, being willing to reveal some layers and show some of yourself. And then the other is really getting clear about the other end. As I talked about, knowing your audience, knowing who's on the other end, who's listening to the story, and why this story? And once we get clear about that, then we can, you know, that gets to be the heart of our business. As, you know, Simon Sinek says, people don't buy what you do, but they buy why you do it. So when you can really encapsulate your why in a story, that connects to the people who you need to be connected to.
Yeah. And it gives purpose to that story. It's not just a random story
right
in the middle of a talk. And I feel like we've all felt that awkwardness. We're like, huh, that was a good story. Why did they share that? Yeah. That's where the art comes in. In your experience, what makes a great speaker?
I think a great speaker is one who shows up. And when I talk about showing up, I talk about showing up in your body and your heart and your voice and your breath, and you are fully in the room. So it's about being fully in the room and being able to connect to the audience who's in the room, that you know who you're speaking to. I've so many times, you know, I see so many templated talks where there's a template. It's very rehearsed. It's very, what's the word? Just like cookie cutter. There's like a cookie cutter template for a talk. And I think the great speakers are the ones who really show up fully in the moment, knowing who they're speaking to and speaking directly to that audience and being willing to, you know, being able, having the fluidity to read the room, read the moment, know their talk in their bones. So they really know their content. They really know their material but they're able to, each time they deliver it, make it new and connect to the actual audience in the room.
Yeah, it's so true. I had the opportunity this summer to hear Brendon Burchard speak in a smaller venue in California, and then 4 weeks later in a large venue in Toronto. And my husband's like, what do you love about him so much? And I was like, watch when he comes on stage. He will 100% show up for this audience. And when I saw him in a smaller group in California, I was like, he 100% showed up for us then. Like, it's one of his powers on stage, is that I think if there were two people in the room, he would deliver with the same intensity and integrity every single time.
Yeah.
So it was just, yeah, it was just a great observation, because he's top of his game in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing is just really taking your audience on a journey. So just like a story is not A, B, C, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, but there's actually the arc of a journey. So, you know, when I work with my clients, we get really clear about what's the goal. Where do you want your audience to end up? What do you want them to think and do and feel and say at the end of the talk? And what's the journey you want to take them on to get them there? And when you really, I feel like the talks that I love are the ones where I am taken on a journey. I there's some surprise. I don't know where I'm going. It's not so templated that I can kind of guess exactly where this talk is going, but I'm really taken on a journey. And that's what I love to do with my clients, is really get clear about what's the journey you're taking your audience on. Where do you want them to go, and how are we going to get them there?
I love that. Joanna, what do you want your legacy to be?
I think my legacy that I showed up. I showed up, and I invited other people to show up. And by showing up, we dismantled the patriarchy, and we liberated ourselves from oppression, and we got to be our full human selves in our voices and our bodies because I spoke my truth. And because I spoke my truth, somebody else spoke her truth. And because we're speaking our truths, the patriarchy crumbles.
What a perfect and timely response. How would you define health?
It's alignment. It's when we're aligned, when our body and our voice and our heart and our spirit are in alignment and in the room. And I think that means paying attention and telling the truth, being heartbreakingly honest with ourselves and our relationships, and really showing up for that. I think being willing to show up for the discomfort is how we heal the discomfort, and how we heal the hurts of being human, is really being willing to show up for it with one another.
Our body is a series of interconnected systems. What is happening in one system puts pressure on another. We understand this intuitively. And yet the most powerful medical system in the world, Western medicine, continues to evaluate our health in individualized silos. We have assessments related to cardiovascular health, oncology, respirology, dermatology. We have individual silos of expertise. When we assess the body from a functional perspective in our practice, we want to understand not whether you are necessarily fine in all of these different systems, but whether or not they are functioning in an integrative manner in a way that moves you closer to optimal health. While there are lots of functional tests that we can do to be able to assess that, technology is enabling us to start to look at this thing on the basis of artificial intelligence through the aggregation of data. We do this in our practice using a tool called Living Matrix, and I want to make this assessment available to you. If you go to our new website, anthropologyperformancelabs.com, on the front page, you will see an opportunity for you to opt in into your personalized functional medicine quiz. Completing this questionnaire will take approximately 40 minutes of your time, and when you're finished, we're going to prompt you to have an opportunity to sit down from someone on our medical team to review your individualized results. We are all on big missions. We are all trying to change the world. It's no longer sufficient for our health to simply be fine. For us to achieve what we want to do as badass women with a vision for how we can help the world, we need to move our health to a place of optimal. And I invite all of you the opportunity to see how close to that line you really are. Go to anthropologyperformancelabs.com and do your quiz today.
beautifully put, and a great place to transition to the second part of this interview. And I call this part our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in our life as well. So these are quick, rapid fire questions. I'm going to throw them your way. You've had no prep on them. And it's really just to get a little bit of insight in terms of how you think about your life and some of the things that are really important to you so that you can show up in a really big way in a consistent manner.
Okay.
You ready? Yes. I really build it up, but it's really not that big.
Okay.
Everyone's like, oh gosh. Do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share it?
I don't have a consistent evening routine. I'm working on it. I'm working on shutting down. I have an agreement with my accountability partner to shut my computer down by 9:30. And sometimes I struggle with that. It's like, oh, I got to stay on my computer and work late. So I'm going to tell you right now, I have written a check for $1,000 to Donald Trump. And if I stay on my computer after 9:30, I have to send the check.
I love that.
So
you're highly incentivized to go to bed.
Highly incentivized. Or just to get off the screen, just to get off the screen. And then I read a book or I write, or anything off the screen is allowed as long as I'm not on the screen.
Yeah, it's such a great point. You've got to make things really matter. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
I'm reading fiction. I'm actually reading young adult fiction. I have a 13-year-old niece and nephew who are twins, and I'm reading the books that they're reading. And there's some amazing young adult fiction out there. I love it.
Oh, that's awesome. What a great idea. What is one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Breakfast. I am a freak for breakfast. I eat eggs and kale and usually some smoked fish, a little yam, a little sauerkraut. And I love getting up in the morning. I'm a big breakfast person, and just like every day, fat and protein go.
Amazing. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I ride my bike. I mostly get around for bike. For 5 years, I didn't own a car. I actually just bought a car about 6 months ago, after 5 years of being car free. And I mostly get around, but still, even with the car, I still get around mostly by bike and bus. And I think that is totally badass, and I love it.
That's amazing. Where do you live?
I live in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay, so how much of the season can you not use your bike? Or are you one of these hardcore people that uses it 12 months of the year?
I use it through the winter. In Boulder, it gets cold, it gets snowy, but because of the sunshine, the snow melts pretty quickly. So through most of the winter, I can get around on bike. I just have to bundle up. Like, the streets don't get super icy.
That's amazing.
So I can ride around my bike, I bundle up, but I also, you know, I use the bus, I drive my car in the winter for sure, now that I have one.
Now you've got options.
Yeah.
Final question for you, Johanna. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Oh, we definitely learned to become. I was not an entrepreneur. I was a starving artist. I was destined to be poor for the rest of my life. I had no idea what it meant to own a business. And now I do. And I'm totally rocking, and I love it.
Good for you. Johanna, I know people are going to want to follow up with you. Where can they go to learn a little bit more about what you're up to?
My website is johannawalker.com. I also have a page, johannawalker.com/anthropology, where I'd love to offer a gift. I have a class that talks about, it's an online class that just talks about how to find your story and really the key pieces to crafting a signature talk. And I'd love to share that with your audience.
Well, that's amazing. And that's so generous. And it's such a powerful system and way to connect to people on scale. So thank you so much for sharing that. And we'll make that available in our show notes so that everybody can access it. Johanna, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
You're so welcome. Great talking.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.